ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते। फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 9 कॉल्ड द लॉर्ड इनकार्नेट्स एज मोहिनी मूर्ति टेक्स्ट नंबर 19। असुराणां सुधादानम् सर्पाणामिव दुर्नयम् मत्वा जाति नृशंसानां नतां व्यभजदच्युत। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पस बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। Demons are by nature crooked like snakes. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible, since this would be as dangerous as supplying milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. Please repeat. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes.
Demons are by nature crooked like snakes.
Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible, since this would be as dangerous as supplying milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. Purport. It is said, Sarpa Krura Khala Krura Sarpat Krura Tara Khala. The snake is very crooked and envious, and so also is a person like a demon. Mantroshadhi Vasha Sarpa Khala Kena Nivaryate. One can bring a snake under control with mantras, herbs, and drugs, but an envious and crooked person cannot be brought under control by any means. Considering this logic, the Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it unwise to distribute nectar to the demons. So I'm going to read a couple other verses which have very short purports and go along with the same theme here.
Kalpayitva prithak panktir ubhayesham jagatpati tangschopaveshayamasa sveshu sveshu cha panktishu.
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead as Mohini Murti, the Master of the Universe, arranged separate lines of sitting places and seated the demigods and demons according to their positions.
Daityan grihita kalaso vanchayan upasancharai durasthan payayamasa jaramrityu haram sudham.
Taking the container of nectar in her hands, she first approached the demons, satisfied them with sweet words, and thus cheated them of their share of the nectar. Then she administered the nectar of the demigods. She administered nectar to the demigods who were sitting at a distant place to make them free from invalidity, old age, and death. Purport. Mohini Murti, the Personality of Godhead, gave the demigods seats at a distance. Then she approached the demons and spoke with them very graciously, so that they thought themselves very fortunate to talk with her. Since Mohini Murti had seated the demigods at a distant place, the demons thought that the demigods would get only a little of the nectar, and that Mohini Murti was so pleased with the demons that she would give the demons all the nectar. The words vanchayan upasancharai indicate that the Lord's whole policy was to cheat the demons simply by speaking sweet words. The Lord's intention was to distribute the nectar only to the demigods. So, here we have Krishna functioning as the supreme cheater. Krishna is expert at everything. He's very daksha, he's very skilled in any type of endeavor. And Prabhupada would say that if someone wants, has a desire to cheat Krishna, then Krishna can reciprocate with them by functioning as the very best of all cheaters. Now, here he's cheating the demons by taking away the share of nectar that legally at least 50% belongs to them. If you look at it in legal terms, they both entered into this activity with a certain contract, And the contract was that both sides would cooperate. And they did it quite well. In fact, they got the bad end of the bargain. They were, when the churning was going on, they were using the snake, the serpent Vasuki, and they got the end with the hoods. And so they were sweating and toiling in this fire and poisonous breath of the serpent, whereas the demigods took the tail. So the demons actually worked pretty hard. And they, considering that they were demons, they did quite a remarkable job of cooperating, which is a very unusual thing for demons. But they did a good job, and now they're waiting patiently for the nectar. And they've even received a promise from the Supreme Lord that she will deliver half of the nectar to them. And yet, as we see here, the Lord is cheating them. We find that Krishna functions as a cheater in many, many occasions. Another famous example of him cheating is which one? Anyone remember? Yes. Yeah. Where did he actually cheat? Yeah, as Vamanadev, as Bali Maharaj, in the story of Bali Maharaj. Right? He cheated again what was rightfully the share of the demons. Bali Maharaj had won it by, kind of proper means, according to the rule of war, fighting. He had chased the demigods out of the heavenly kingdom. And the Lord came and he begged for only 3 small paces of land. And he didn't say small, he said 3 paces of land. But anyone under common law, they'd understand, 3 paces of land means your regular steps. But instead, the Lord expanded himself into the form of Trivikrama and took 3 huge, massive steps that covered the entire universe. And this way deprived Bali Maharaj of everything that he had. Not only did he steal everything that Bali Maharaj had, but after he took everything away, then he added insult to injury by asking him, where do I put the 3rd step? And imagine the Lord's, gall, his cheekiness, right? That on the one hand, he takes much more than what is expected. He covers the entire universe in 2 steps. And then for the 3rd step, he starts accusing Bali Maharaj of being dishonest and unfaithful, and you don't deserve to be a member of this family because Maharaj Virochana, your father and your grandfather and Prahlad Maharaj, all these wonderful people were so righteous, and yet you cannot even keep your vow. So he cheats him of what he has. On top of that, then he adds insult to injury by claiming that he's not truthful, that he cannot keep his vow. And then when he finally offers his own head and surrenders everything, then the Lord ties him up like a common criminal, Prabhupada says. He ties him up and pushes him down to the lower planetary regions. So Krishna can be a very expert cheater. Here we find in this story also, he's using all his charms. In the previous purport, Prabhupada said there's no one more beautiful than Krishna himself, not even the goddess of fortune. And when he decides to charm someone, no one can resist, especially not the demons. So here, he's completely put the demons under his control, just by his sweet words. The demons are worried that if they speak up, they notice that they're being cheated, but they're worried that if they speak up, then their relationship with this beautiful woman will be damaged. Right? She's so beautiful, she likes them, and if they say anything against her, then she might decide to favor the demigods instead. And so keeping that in mind, the Lord is able to conquer over them. So Prabhupada is saying here, he's quoting this verse from Chainakya Pandit. Sarpa krura khala krura, sarpat krura tara khala. That a snake is very dangerous, a cruel and envious person is very dangerous. But more envious, more dangerous than a snake is the person who is envious, the human being. Mantroshadhi vashas sarpa. Because you can control a snake by mantras, the poison can be reduced, or by various kinds of antidotes, oshadhi. But you cannot control someone who's envious in any way. And yet, the Lord he's showing one way of controlling these envious people. And that way of controlling them is through lust, right? Through kama. Because Krishna explains very nicely in Bhagavad Gita. He says, kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhava mahasano mahapapma vidhyainam iha vairinam. That this lust only is the all-devouring sinful enemy in this world. You see, if you look around in this world, then you'll find that the whole world comes in pairs. Right? Everyone comes in twos. You look at the birds, they come in pairs. You look at the dogs, they come in pairs. You look at the pigeons, they come in pairs. You look at the lions, they come in pairs. You look at every human being, they all come in pairs. This attraction between man and woman, between one sex and the opposite sex, is the fundamental principle upon which this whole material world is founded. You know, there was this very famous Western psychologist. His name was Freud, Sigmund Freud. And his theories have been very influential among psychiatrists and psychologists all around the world. And his basic point was that everyone, the foundation of all relationships is lust, is kama. He took it to quite an extreme. He even said that even between parent and child, the relationship is fundamentally based on lust. There's some kind of envy that is there, a lustful envy. So he was quite crazy in that regard. He pushed it very, very far. But the point that he made, that everything is founded on lust, he was very, very atheistic himself. But the point is true. Right? The point is true. In the material world, everything, the foundation of every activity in this world is lust. Just look around in the world when you go outside, right? And see the way the world works. Every billboard is founded on this principle of lust. Every film is founded on this principle of lust. There's no good film without some kind of love interest in the film. There's no good novel without some kind of love interest in the film. You look at any kind of advertisement, any kind of commercial. Even the sports people like to watch. It's a glorification of this body, wanting to watch the opposite sex. Everything in this world, somehow or other, it's founded on this basic principle of lust. And it's so strong, this lust, that basically anyone in this world can be brought under its control. Anyone, no matter how great that person may be. All the way we know from Vishwamitra, all the way to the common man, right? Any Indradev himself, any of the demigods, the human beings, the rishis, the animals, everyone is founded. They can be brought under control by this simple weapon of Maya, this principle of Rajoguna, this kama or this lust. Why is it so difficult to conquer over this lust? Why is it so problematic? Why is it that we can practically give up everything in this world, but it's so difficult to give up this principle of lust, this desire to enjoy our senses? And the reason is because this lust is basically a transformation, it's a reflection of the innermost desire of the soul, the desire to love Krishna. That desire to love Krishna, that attachment, that relationship with Krishna is who we are. It's actually fundamentally who we are. This is our very nature. It's our swarupa. And so sometimes people, they wonder. One time someone was asking me, why couldn't Krishna make this feeling of lust a little bit weaker? It would be easier for us to get back to Godhead. Why did he make it so strong that practically no one can conquer over it? Even if you try to do it, sometimes you slip, you fall down. Why doesn't he make it just a little bit weaker? And the point is, it's impossible. It cannot be any weaker. Because this is who we are. This is our nature. It's our relationship with Krishna. Reducing the strength of the lust means to reduce the strength of our love for Krishna. And of course that's impossible. We're bound to Krishna. This is who we actually are. It's just that when that original love is reflected, it's perverted, when it's found in its opposite manifestation, it shows up as lust. So naturally, it's going to be the strongest quality of the soul. Isn't it wonderful that our love for Krishna is the most powerful element, most powerful quality that we have in the soul? And therefore, when that love is misplaced, it turns into kama, into lust. And we try to find enjoyment in so many different places in this world. And we suffer as a result. So it's part of that original nature of the soul. And therefore, someone who can conquer over this enemy of lust, who's able to control their senses, that person becomes deserving of every opulence and every honor in this world. Sometimes people, they ask, they wonder, why is it that sannyasis get so much honor and respect? Why is it that people give them every comfort in life? In the Western countries especially, people ask these questions a lot because there's no culture of respecting sadhus or sannyasis. Even in India, people will ask this question a lot. That he's a sadhu, why is he getting so much respect? Why is he getting so much comfort, so much opulence? Why does he get special food and this and that? The answer is that if you can control this enemy of lust, if you're ready to give up this one thing in life, which is association with the opposite sex, then you too can have every comfort in this world. You can have anything you want. You can enjoy every comfort if you're willing to give up this one little thing, which is the association of the opposite sex. The desire of lust. That's all. Such a one little thing, one small thing. If we can give it up, then anything in this world basically is in our hands. We can conquer anything. We become deserving of receiving any kind of respect. And if we cannot conquer it, then no matter what kind of good qualities we have, we'll find ourselves falling down. And the greatest people in this world, you look at the greatest leaders and politicians in the modern world, you look at the greatest of leaders and kings in ancient history, this point is seen in their life. Right? That this one little thing they cannot give up, then no matter all these other good qualities they may have, right, eventually it leads to their fall down. And you give up this one little thing, and there's nothing in this world which is not within your grasp. This is why Indra is always so afraid of sadhus and rishis and yogis. Right? He's always trying to break their meditation. Because he knows that because they've conquered over this lust, therefore anything is within their grasp. If they want, they can even conquer over my own kingdom of heaven. He knows that fact. And therefore he tries to conquer them by that very same quality that he knows that he is conquered by. And that's the quality of lust or kama. Everyone in this world experiences this lust in different ways. We as human beings think about it in terms of relationship, intimacy, intercourse between a man and a woman. But everyone, every species in this material world is experiencing this sex desire in one way or another. There's one particular species of bugs. They come together, they mate. And after they mate, then the female bug, she bites off the head of the male bug, and she eats his head. And this way the male bug dies. This is the way that they mate. It's pleasure. It's happiness. It's the highest happiness that they experience in that species. Otherwise, why would that male bug go seeking that female bug? Even though he knows that the minute I mate, the next moment she's going to chop off my head and eat it. Why is he still going there? Because that's the highest pleasure that's available to him in that particular form of body. Now, we cannot imagine that as pleasure. Right? Oh my God, run away from someone like that. A cannibal. It's horrible. Right? But for them, it's pleasure. We cannot appreciate it, but for them, it's pleasure. You go to some higher species, a little bit higher. They have intercourse one time, and then they give birth to so many. Right? The ant, the bee, right, the queen bee, she's impregnated once in her lifetime. And then she's giving birth to millions and millions of ants. They're coming out like this. The whole colony is produced by that mother bee. Right? This is her sense pleasure. Right? This is the sex pleasure found in that particular species. And the ants are working hard day and night just to support their grihastha life. Right? That everything go nicely, everything goes smoothly. They'll be willing to sacrifice their life for the sake of the queen. That's their form of pleasure. In the human form of life, our pleasure is a little bit more sophisticated. We don't do it on the street. We don't bite off someone else's head. We do it a little more sophisticated. We do it privately. We do it in a room. It's all based on sparsha, on the sense of touch. And that feeling of touch will give us pleasure. And that pleasure will last just a few moments. Just like that. We can get that pleasure again and again if we control it by artificial means. But basically, it's a gross type of pleasure. And just like the pleasure of that lower animal, the bugs, right? It looks so horrible and so gross to us. How can they enjoy sex pleasure like that? In the same way, our sex pleasure looks very gross and horrible to the demigods. They look at us and they go, that's happiness? This is how you enjoy? Because the Gandharvas, they don't have to enjoy sex pleasure like this. Their sex pleasure is all on the level of sound. They enjoy the highest pleasure available to them, not by the sense of touch, but by the sense of sound. Just by their beautiful voices, by exchanging that beautiful sound, they're able to experience the highest pleasure. They live on a much more subtle, a much higher plane than we do. In this way, you go higher and higher. In the planet of the moon, all this sex pleasure is enjoyed on the level of the mind. Finally, you come to Lord Brahma himself, the highest living entity in this world. And his sex pleasure is all on the level of the buddhi, the intelligence. His whole body, it's all it's made of is intelligence, is buddhi. Just like our body is made of earth and water, mostly. So in higher planetary systems, their bodies are made of higher and more subtle elements. At the level of Lord Brahma's level, it's all made of intelligence or buddhi. Therefore, if his buddhi becomes polluted, you know the story in Srimad Bhagavatam, right? How he once ran after his own daughter. His buddhi became polluted, he gave up his own body. Now for us, that's an extreme measure. We commit suicide. But for him, this is what he has to do. He gives up his body. His body is made of intelligence. He gives up that whole conception of enjoyment, of sense enjoyment. If it's polluted, he just gives it up. And that type of enjoyment he can find on the level of intelligence. The pleasures of the gross physical body, the pleasures of the mind. The pleasures of the mind, you cannot compare the pleasures of the body to that. If you know the pleasures of the mind, right, they're unlimitedly greater than the pleasures of the body. This is why the jnanis, this is where they get their whole oomph in life, their whole push, their enthusiasm, is because they're eating the bananas of the mind, right? Very sweet and wonderful. And it cannot compare to the sense pleasure of this world. When I was studying in Oxford, there was this one man who used to always come to the library. Oxford has vast libraries. Practically every book published in the history of the world is there. Right? Massive, massive collections. Not exaggerating, everything is there. The Bodleian Library, and they have these stacks where you can go and there's racks and racks of books and, you know, you move the shelves and you can go inside and pull books out and so forth. Unlimited. For someone who's a jnani, it's just like Disneyland, you know, it's unlimited pleasure. And you'd see he'd go there early in the morning. He wouldn't come out. Anytime you'd go there, if you ever studied late till the library closed, he'd be there. If you ever went early in the morning, he'd always be there. Anytime he'd be there. And you look at him, and it was obvious that he had no interest in a comfortable, nice life. Right? You knew that he lived in some rundown place. Right? He didn't have very good clothes. It was clear that he didn't have a wife or family. No one could live with him. He was completely, in one sense, he was completely renounced. Right? He was a vairagi completely. So was he a transcendentalist? Was he a devotee? No. He was just equally on the material platform. Just he was enjoying the pleasures of the mind. Right? the pleasures of the intelligence even higher. The pleasures that you can experience in the planet of Brahma. We think, oh, what a boring life. He sits there all day like this, right? Not doing anything. At least we've got some activity, some fun. We can engage with other. No, Brahma's pleasure is amazing. It's nothing we can imagine. It's nothing we can compare with in this material world. The Upanishads say that you imagine a person who is young, who's healthy, and who owns this entire world. Imagine a person like that. Young, healthy, owning, possessing this in the wealth of the entire world. That, the Upanishads say, we should consider as one unit of happiness. The level, the happiness found in the Gandharvas is 100 times that happiness. That kind of happiness, one unit of happiness, none of us can experience to begin with at all. Even that happiness we don't have. Who in this world has everything? No. But imagine someone who has everything. The Gandharva's happiness is 100 times that. The demigod's happiness, 100 times that, the devas. The higher devas, like Indra, their happiness, 100 times that of the lower devas. The happiness of Brahma, 100 times that. And the happiness of someone who has known Brahman, who is liberated, Brahmananda, that happiness is 100 times the happiness of Lord Brahma himself. And that happiness does not even compare to one drop of the happiness that we find in Krishna Prema, in love for Krishna. That's why the devotees, they give up this happiness of Brahmananda. Kaivalya nistarako. It says, Anandam Budivardhanaika Nipuno Kaivalya Nistarako. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were enjoying this. Every moment was like diving into an ocean of bliss. Gopi Bhava Rasamritabdi Lahari Kallola Magno Muhur. Again and again, they're diving in this ocean of happiness, of love of Krishna. Kaivalya Nistarako. And they give up this happiness. Well, the happiness of the material world, tyaktva turna mashesha mandalapati shrenim sadhatuchavat. They give up the highest happiness of this material world, the most sophisticated happiness, tuchavat, like it's garbage, useless, like nothing. They just throw it away. And then you think, oh, the happiness of liberation, the happiness of moksha, kaivalya nistarako. They have no interest in liberation. What is that happiness in the face of the happiness of love for Krishna? Not only are they free of that desire for happiness, but they're delivering other people from the dangers of liberation. Imagine. This whole world is thinking, I want moksha. I want mukti. And the Goswamis of Vrindavan are going around saving people from moksha, liberating them from that liberation. So this happiness, this sex happiness is there in the material world. Right? This is how Mohini Murthy is controlling the demons, is through this lust. But we should understand that there's much, much better forms of happiness waiting for us. Even in the material world, there's better forms of happiness than what we find in the material world. If our mind it ever gets attracted, if it ever gets confused, we ever get distracted, we should just remind ourselves that this is so small, it's so little, this happiness. Even if you want to experience material happiness, there's better ways to do it than the happiness of sense enjoyment, the happiness of lust. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that by the use of the intelligence, we can cut down this enemy known as lust. We can destroy it by making the intelligence very strong. Suppose we're going to the university, for example, or we're working, and we happen to see someone who's exceptionally beautiful or very handsome. The mind becomes very attracted. There's a certain age, of course, where this is very, very strong. But it never dies. It never goes away. It's always there. Suppose we're attracted to someone. As soon as the thought comes into our mind, we have to immediately engage the intelligence. It has to be automatic. And we ask ourselves, we think. I remember when I was in the university, studying for my undergraduate degree, master's, PhD, like that. So many different attractions are there. So many distractions are there. 17, 18, 19 years old. The mind is very flickering at that stage. So the mind goes here, the mind goes there. So she's so beautiful. And naturally, you don't even realize it, and you end up speaking very sweetly to someone who's looking very nice. Right? Some attraction is there. Immediately, we have to ask ourselves, why am I allowing myself to go in this direction? You can ask yourself, am I ready? Where will this take me, this attraction? Where will it go? Where will it end up? Would I be willing to marry this person tomorrow if I had to? You can ask yourself that question. Could I see myself living my life with this person? 99.9% of the time, the answer is no. No. Obviously not. I'm a devotee. She's not a devotee. Definitely, I can't live with this person. Right? In the beginning, there may be some happiness. Then it'll be a lifetime of struggle. I want to get married to devotee. Okay, forget it. She's a devotee. Yes, but do I want to just go on doing this on my own? Or do I want the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas, of my parents, of the devotee community? Or do I want to just fall into something just like that? No. I want Krishna's blessings before I go into something. Okay, don't let it go. 99.9% of the time, when some attraction is there in the mind, it's just an idle attraction. It means the mind is just spinning. It's just doing its own thing. But if you use the intelligence, you know this is not going to go anywhere. Right? That there's nothing can come out of this. Then why are you giving yourself so much suffering? Why are you putting yourself into so much difficulty? For what purpose? It's just self-torture, no? So many times I see with my own students, they go through this cycle over and over and over again. They become attracted to someone, some kind of relationship develops, they spend all their time in class, instead of listening to what I'm saying, or to taking notes, they're thinking, what's she thinking, what she's saying, what he's doing, what she's saying. One time, this one girl, when I first started teaching, she came to me after class and said, Professor, I'm so sorry. I really had a difficult time. I wasn't able to submit my essay on time. I've just been going through so much difficulty in life. It's really been a difficult period for me personally. And so much trouble and this and that and really... So I said, that's okay, I understand you've been going through a lot. I thought maybe she was having some difficulty in class, she couldn't understand what I was saying, or maybe the material was too difficult, or maybe some tragedy in her family. I said, is there any way I can help? Is there something I can do for you? She said, no. It's just that I broke up with my boyfriend. We had been together for a long time. It had been a full 6 months, and I just broke up with him today. And she had gone through this whole cycle. For me, it was a shock, right? It was kind of it was a realization. I think the students are sitting in class listening to me. This is what they're doing most of the time, right? 6 months was a long relationship for her, and she was brokenhearted. Her suffering was real. It was difficult for me to contain myself. It was so, you know, I thought 6 months. What's that? But for her, it was genuine. It was real. She was suffering like anything. She had become attached. She had given her heart to someone. And then that heart had been broken. And the only relief when your heart is broken like that, the only relief, the only way to get over it is what, you know? Is to find someone else. Is to find someone else. It's the only way you can get over it. And you see people going through this vicious cycle over and over again, right? They become attracted, they become attached, they become brokenhearted. Why? Because they know, you ask them later on, you really think, even if someone is in the middle of a relationship, and you ask them, you really think you're going to spend your life with this person? And they'll tell you, flat out, no, I don't think so. Then why are you going through this? You know you'll have to break up one day. Yes, they know. And they'll go through that suffering. And again, they'll become attracted to someone new. Again, they'll become attached. Again, their heart will be broken. Again, they'll become attracted. In this way, this is, what is it? This is the definition of torture, right? This people put themselves through this self-torture again and again and again and again. And as devotees, if our mind wavers, we have to ask ourselves this question. Why? Why should I put myself through that? Through that type of problem, to that type of suffering? If you have a desire for association with the opposite sex, okay, then do it. There's provision for that through proper entry in the Grihastha Ashram. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada, he says, this is third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Garda Muni and Devahuti. When Garda Muni had a desire to get married, it happens sometimes, even to the best of devotees. He submitted his desire to Krishna. He said, my dear Lord, please, I know I've meditated on you. He had Krishna's own darshan. This is how strong you see this lust is. Right? He meditated for so many years. Krishna himself comes in person. God himself shows up in front of him. And what does he ask him? Please, I want a wife. Right? Give me a wife. It's there. It's so strong. Someone like Kardama Muni, right? Who, of course, he attained perfection. The Lord himself came as his son, right? He was the ideal grihastha. But still, he said, okay, I have this desire. So he submitted his desire to the Lord. In that purport, Srila Prabhupada, he says, that if a devotee has a desire to get married, then the devotee should understand, every Krishna conscious boy should know, that Krishna will get that boy a princess to marry. Just like Devahuti. And every girl should understand that Krishna will get her a boy just suitable to her heart's desire. And in this way, he should not worry and simply go on doing his devotional service. Simply go on serving Krishna, knowing well that Krishna will take care of everything. In other words, there is no point in life where we have to experiment, where we have to try out, where it is justified to give our mind free rein. Oh, right now I'm in white. I'm thinking about becoming a grihastha anyway. So let me try to associate a little bit. It's okay, I can speak a little bit loosely. No, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, no ashram is that necessary, is that desirable. Because Krishna, he'll take care. If we give the mind free rein, the mind can take us anywhere. Krishna, he discusses this in Bhagavad Gita very nicely. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodo vijayate krodat bhavati sammoha sammohat smriti vibhrama smriti brahmashat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati. Krishna says, when we're contemplating the objects of the senses, we see something, oh, this is so nice. Dhyayato vishayan punsa sangasteshu pajayate. This attachment develops. I have to have it. You see something very nice, something good to eat. Some nice pastries, some cake, some donuts, some gulab jamun, something like that. You see it, the desire comes in the mind. Oh, I have to have it. One time I was sitting in an airport waiting for a flight. This was in the United States. And everywhere in airports in the US, they have these shops, they sell donuts. You know these donuts, these pastries with rings, with holes in the middle? Americans, they love eating donuts. This is one of their favorite foods. Everywhere they have these donut shops. They're called Dunkin' Donuts. And they have this strong smell of donuts. Very fragrant, very attractive. So I was just sitting in the airport. And as it happened nearby, it was just around a corner. There was this Dunkin' Donuts shop. And I had nothing to do, just kind of waiting for my next flight. And as people were walking, they're coming around the corner. I was just observing them. Every person who came around, they couldn't see the shop because it was around the corner. Before they went around, everyone said, oh, that smells so good. Oh, that's so good. Every person commented like that. Every person, dhyayato vishayan pungsa. Right? You see something, oh, it's so nice. And then the mind becomes engaged. It starts thinking. As soon as the desire enters, the mind, it kicks into action. And what is the job of the mind? Making plans, right? Making plans. That, okay, now how can I get these? I want some donuts. Okay, the senses want donuts. Let's see. Okay, now I should go. Maybe I can stop. Just my flight is 10 minutes, but the line is not so long. Maybe I can just stop and I can get to the line. Maybe I should cut in front of the line and I can get a couple donuts. Okay, so the mind starts making plans. I want this, I want this, I want this. The mind kicks in. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangasteshu pajayat. And we become attached to that idea. Hopefully, when the mind gets engaged, then the intelligence will kick in at some point and say, no, your flight will leave. You don't have enough time to stand in line. Or no, you already had 6 donuts at the previous airport. Now you have again, you'll get overweight. Or you're on a diet, it's not good for you, right? So the intelligence hopefully should kick in. That's enough, stop. But most of the time it doesn't. And the mind, it has free rein. We become attached to that idea. From attachment, lust develops, kama, strong desire. At that point, we have to have it. No one can stop us. Right? We have to have it. And then when we don't get it, what happens? Krodha, anger. We become frustrated. Even if we do get it, we'll get frustrated. Because one of two things happens. Either we don't get it and we continue hankering for it. And we don't get it, we become angry and frustrated. Or we get it and it always turns out to be something less than we imagined. Right? On paper, she looked like the perfect match. When she shows up, oh, okay, everyone has certain good and bad qualities. Right? And you have to learn to live with them. Right? You eat that donut, you eat enough of them, okay, then you have to deal with a weight problem, right? And then you have to work out. You have to do everything in this world. It never turns out to be what it is, right? This is Maya's nature. She always overpromises and underdelivers. Right? This is her characteristic. She always promises us too much, and then in the end, it never turns out to be what it is, right? What it's promised. Anything in this world. Any kind of happiness. If you ever been on a vacation or a holiday, you know the type where you plan and plan months in advance and you make reservations in advance and you make, I'm going to do this on day number one and do this on day number two. And something always goes wrong in those plans. Your train is late by 8, 9, 10 hours and you miss one whole day of your enjoyment. You get there and something's wrong with the hotel. You get there, you fall sick, you get diarrhea and you suffer. Right? Or it was supposed to be a day on the beach and it turns out to be cloudy and rainy. Right? Nothing is what it's promised the way it is. And so it leads to frustration. This is how we live our existence in this world. Shochati kangshati, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Shochati kangshati. Hankering and then lamenting. Hankering, lamenting. We want something, we get it, it's not good enough, we lament. We're hankering, we don't get it, we suffer, we lament. Before you get one thing, immediately the next desire is immediately there. You're hankering. You must have had this experience in life. You want something very, very dearly. You're really, really hankering for something. Perhaps it's a position in your career, in your job. You want to get to a certain rank. I remember when I was striving for my PhD, it was the biggest thing in the world. Right. Wow, I have a PhD. Such a big thing. Wow, everyone will call me Dr. Gupta. How nice that'll sound. Right? Dr. Gupta, such a good ring to it. It was the biggest thing in the world. Right? And you get it, you become Dr. Gupta, within six months, it loses its ring. Right? Couple months later, it's nothing. Right? It doesn't have that, all that, whatever it was, the euphoria is gone. You know, a few years after graduation, you don't even think about it. How many of you are B.Techs and M.Techs? So many of you may have studied at IITs and so many places like that. I'm sure you studied so hard. You went to coaching and for years and years and years you struggled to get good on the examination, get entrance there, right? Arrived at IIT. Once you showed up at the institute, was it always this high, this euphoria, this dream that you had, this cloud that you had created of what IIT is? No, it doesn't last. It becomes just part of life, right? Everyone around you is IIT. It's not a big deal. Right? You graduate after a few years. Then what does it mean? Right? What are you after? Then it's not anything. Then you need a good job. You need something, some good position, enough money. Right? You want to make it in your career. And you move higher and higher in your career. You think, I want to be in that person's position. If I can just get there, I'll be happy. And you arrive there. And the euphoria, it barely lasts a couple months before you're loaded with work. 12 hours a day, right? Slogging away. And all that effort. So, shochati kangshati. Shochati kangshati. Shochati kangshati. This is the nature of kama, of lust. It sends us in this cycle, up and down, up and down. Mode of passion means hankering, kangshati. Mode of ignorance means shochati, lamenting. Mode of passion, mode of ignorance. Mode of passion, mode of ignorance. Kangshati, hankering, means you're always looking towards the future. I want that, I want that, I'll get that. Shochati, lamenting, means you're always looking towards the past. Oh, I didn't get that. Oh, I had that and it went away. Oh, it didn't turn out to be. We spend our time looking for the future, mode of passion, looking towards the past, mode of ignorance. And yet, we completely ignore the present. The moment we have now, we don't see. In this very moment, what is our job? What is our duty? That happiness, it's not found in the future. I trust no future, no matter how bright. Why? Because there's no such thing as a future. Can anyone prove to me that the future exists? You cannot. Because you say, oh, the future is tomorrow. I'll show you tomorrow. But when tomorrow arrives, what will it be? The present only. Right? Where's the past? It's not there. It's only a memory. And that memory exists only in the present. A devotee is someone who uses every moment, who lives in the present, says, this moment I have, how can I use this moment for Krishna? The future will take care of itself. The past has already taken care of itself. But the present, this is the moment we have. This is the situation of the mode of goodness, sattva-guna, is living in the present, asking ourselves, what if I have to do at this time, at this moment? So Krishna is describing this. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangasteshu bajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate. Anger arrives, and then of course once anger arrives, frustration is there, we know what happens. The person becomes completely bewildered, their memory is lost, their intelligence is destroyed, and pretty soon you're doing all kinds of crazy things. I once asked one sannyasi, his name is Ganapati Swami. He preaches in the Western United States. He very rarely comes to India. But a very ideal sannyasi. He spent his whole life just driving from one place to another in his van full of books. And he goes to different university campuses and distributes Srila Prabhupada's books. He does this his whole life. This is all he does. One place to another, one place to another. And he came to one to my hometown in Boise, Idaho. And I asked him, he was giving a lecture on this very verse, Dhyayato Vishayan Pungsa. And I asked him, I said, Maharaj, one thing leads to another, and we know this is a vicious cycle. How can we break this cycle? How can we cut it off? What if I happen to be in a position of lust? How can I break it? What if it's too late now, and I'm already head over heels in love? What do I do? In a situation where the desire is uncontrollable, what if I'm already angry, I'm frustrated, what do I do? How can we break that cycle? And you know what Maharaj said? He said, you cannot. It's nearly impossible. Once this cycle begins, the forces are so strong. Prakrite kriyamana nai gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. It's so strong, this force of the three modes of nature. We're practically like helpless puppets in her hands. You look at someone who's going crazy with lust. You try to talk some sense into them. It doesn't make any sense. Right? They might even understand logically. You try to shake them. Wake up. What are you doing? You're messing up your life. It doesn't make any sense. Right? They don't understand. It's practically impossible. He said the only chance we have is right at the beginning. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa. When the thought enters your mind, when the thought first arrives, then we have this little window of opportunity to cut it off, to say, stop it, right there. I'm not going to let my mind engage with it, toy with it. Right? This is our mind's habit. Some thought comes into our mind, we turn it around. We look at it this way, we look at it this way. We turn it this way. Huh? We examine it in every way. How nice it'll taste, how nice it'll look, how nice it'll feel. The mind, it does this. It develops that desire, that attachment, by playing with it. That's the moment we have to cut it off. To use the intelligence and say, stop. What's going to happen? Where is this going to go? What am I going to get from it? Is this what I really want? A moment's pleasure, a lifetime of suffering? No. Then stop, right there. That's the only opportunity we have. Dhyayatam. Of course, if we're later in the stage, sometimes it happens that it's already too late before we even realize, before our intelligence even kicks in. Then it's not like it's hopeless. Right? But on our own strength, it's pretty hopeless. At that point, suppose we're already in the stage of kama or krodha or something like that. Then really the only hope we have is that we're so closely in the association of devotees that someone else will give us a slap and wake us up. That's if something's gone to that extreme, then that's the only hope we have. On our own strength, like Maharaj was saying, on our own strength it's impossible at a later stage. But if we're in the association of devotees, then somehow or other devotees are very kind and they'll shake us, they'll wake us up and they'll say, kya kar rahe ho? What are you doing? Right? Wake up. And if we're lucky, then okay, we might wake up. Someone can stop us from this. That's the only hope, is that association of devotees. This is why it's so important. Prabhupada said we have to always remain packed up in the association of devotees. Right? Packed up, just tight. One time, I was with Lokanath Swami. We had spent a little bit of time together. We were working on this Sanskrit project. And near the end of our stay, I asked Maharaj, I said, Maharaj, please give me some little bit of advice, something for my spiritual life, so that I can practice Krishna consciousness into the future. And Maharaj, he thought for a little bit, and he said something very wonderful. He said, you know, in Kumbh Mela, when you go, if you want to go bathe in Kumbh Mela at the right time, then he said, the crowd is so heavy in Kumbh Mela. It's so intense. You're so tightly packed up with everyone there that even if at the last minute you decide that I can't handle these crowds, I can't handle the Ganga, what if I drown and you want to go the other direction? You cannot, right? The crowd, even if you decide I'm just not going to move my feet and I'm going to stand here, you get frightened, you freak out at the last minute. The crowd is so intense that practically you're picked up, you're lifted, and you're dropped into the middle of the Ganga. He said, this is the key to spiritual life. That we want to remain so packed up in the association of devotees that even if at some point in life we come to a stage where the mind goes crazy, the intelligence goes crazy, we develop this demoniac nature, we're attracted by some mohini, right? Even something goes wrong in our life. Or we even decide actively that I'm not going to serve Krishna, forget it. Then just because of our association of devotees, some or other, we'll be picked up and we'll find ourselves in the spiritual world at the end. Right. We'll arrive there, we won't even know how we got there. Right. We think, oh, I tried my very best to stay away from Krishna, and I'm here in the spiritual world. What happened? Right. How did I get here? Oh, it's just the mercy of the devotees. Right. Just the mercy of devotees. Mm. Prabhupada, he said once, right, that I prayed to Krishna to send me qualified men. Instead, I got all of you. Right? So it's okay, right? Lord Ram used an army of monkeys. We may not be very qualified ourselves. That's okay. But just because we're so fortunate that we're in this association of Srila Prabhupada's followers, that somehow we have Srila Prabhupada's mercy, that we have some hope of getting to Krishna. Right? His recommendation is there. Right. Prabhupada, he can get us in through the back door if he wants. Right? Even if we're not qualified to go in the front door. Krishna, Prabhupada, he can get us in. He knows Vaikuntha like the brahmacharis here know this temple. Right? Just I for the first time I saw devotees crawling in through this little hole on the side. All these people were appearing, and I thought, where are they coming from? Maybe they're going through the picture. This is something unique. Some siddhi they have. And then I saw, oh no, there's a little gap here, a little hole. They're crawling through into the temple. Right? So they know, I walk around, I go this way, I come into the front entrance, I find my way. They know, okay, I can get in this way also. Right? So Prabhupada, he knows the spiritual world like that. He knows every little corner, ins and outs. He knows little gap is here, little gap. We'll sneak in here. Huh? We'll sneak this devotee. Let's, Prabhuji, we'll sneak in through here. We'll get this Mataji in through here. Right? Somehow we'll get them into the spiritual world. Why? Because they helped me. They did something sincerely for me. So I'm so grateful for their service. I'm so grateful. Prabhupada, he used to, in his lectures sometimes, he used to express his gratitude to his toward his devotees, toward his disciples. You know why? He said, thank you so much that all of you are helping me serve my Guru Maharaj. Right? That Prabhupada, he had such a strong desire to please his spiritual master. And he felt so grateful to anyone who helped him do a little bit to satisfy his spiritual master, to execute the order of his Guru Maharaj. He was so grateful. He'd become choked up. He'd start crying in expressing this gratitude. Any little bit of service we do, Prabhupada is so grateful for that service that he'll sneak us in somehow or other. Right? So that's the hope we have. Otherwise, this enemy known as lust, impossible. Right? It's impossible to conquer. It's so difficult. Right? But it's all about association. If we stay packed up in the association devotees, then okay, we may have some ups and downs, right? Fall downs will be there. They'll be there. It's not a question of if we will fall down in spiritual life. That's not the question. The question is simply, when we fall down, how do we get up? Right? When we fall, will we recover with flourish? Right? Will we come up? You know, sometimes someone trips while dancing. In kirtan. They just get up and they start dancing again. It doesn't matter. Right? It'll happen in spiritual life for everyone. We'll have moments where we will slip. For some people, it's a little slip. For someone, it's a big slip. That's not the important thing. Krishna, he doesn't take that too seriously. What he's more interested in is how quickly did you get up and continue your devotional service? Did you get up with enthusiasm and immediately start again? Or were you so self-conscious? Were you so proud and arrogant that you decided, no, I can't do it anymore. Everyone knows I fell down. That's simply the question. The whole Bhagavatam is full of stories of fall down. The entire Bhagavatam. It's all stories of fall down. Some subtle fall downs, some gross fall downs. All the way from Brahmaji to Indra. Right? You know the story of Jad Bharata. Everyone, it's a story of fall down only. But why are all those Vaishnavas glorified? Why do we read their stories over and over and over again? Because the question is, how do we recover? How quickly can we recover? How can we get up and maintain our determination to serve Krishna? Apichet suduracharo bhajate mam ananya bhag sadhureva samantavya. As long as our intelligence, our determination is rightly situated. That I am a servant of Srila Prabhupada. This is who I am. This is my job. This is my identity. I may be weak. I may sometimes slip. I may be expert at my service. I may not be so good. Whatever I am, I'm a servant of Srila Prabhupada. And so, Prabhupada, you have to accept me as I am, one way or another. I'm trying my best. I know I'm weak. I'm sorry. But please accept me as your servant. Because I know that at the bottom of my heart, at the bottom of everything, this is the only thing that'll make me happy. I know this. We can experience this in our own lives. Sometimes all these desires, they swirl around in our hearts. Maybe it's desire for money or for success or any kind of desire we have. It swirls, it becomes like a whirlwind, like a whirlpool. But underneath it all, you know for a fact that ultimately the only thing that's going to make me happy is Krishna consciousness. Just somehow I don't have the strength to stand. I'm in the whirlpool and I can't get my feet on the ground, that's all. But I know in my heart that this is the only thing that'll make me happy. Therefore, please accept me as your servant. Even if I'm weak, please accept me because I'm trying my best. It's that attitude which can save us from this enemy known as lust. That attitude. Otherwise, if we show up with a challenge to Maya, I'll fight you, you watch me. Right? I've been a brahmachari for 20 years now, not a single fall down. And Maya will say, oh yeah? I haven't used half the tricks I have up my sleeve. Just watch this. And she'll send us something very simple. She knows us so well. She knows us so well. She's got a hook inside every one of us. And she knows what our weak point is. And she won't use it just like that. She'll wait just for the right time, just when we're getting a little proud in our devotional service. At the right moment. And then she'll push that button. Right? That weak spot. That she knew all along. We didn't know. We were foolish enough to think that we're capable, we're strong ourselves. And when we become a little proud in devotional service, she'll push that button. And immediately everything's finished. One moment. And all our pride is finished. She's got this hook in us. And if we want to challenge her, right, good luck. Right, Prabhupada says we're not afraid of Maya enough. He said, I pray every day. Prabhupada said, that please Krishna protect me from Maya. Who are we? It's the Lord's own energy, His own Shakti. Shrishti sthiti pralaya sadhana shakti reka chayaiva yasya bhuvanani bibharti durga. She's so powerful. Shrishti sthiti pralaya. The creation, the maintenance, the destruction of this whole creation is done by her single-handedly. And we show up ourselves. Huh? And we think, I'm going to fight her. Huh? I'm going to challenge her. No, our shelter is only Krishna. Because if Maya has a hook inside us, Krishna, His reach is even deeper. His hook, His tie is even stronger. If Maya knows us well, Krishna knows us even better. And if we're willing to surrender to Krishna, to call out to Him for help, He will pull such strong strings that even Maya then has to give up. She says, okay, now I cannot do anything. This my Guru Maharaj, he tells this very nice story of this devotee. Perhaps I've told you before. He was a devotee, someone who had disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who had served Prabhupada for many years. And then at some point in his life, he left the practice of Krishna consciousness. He became weaker, he gave up his sadhana, and he stopped regarding himself as a devotee. He just took on a secular life, was doing a job and so forth. He used to think, you know, Krishna consciousness was a phase in my life. It was a stage. I went through that in my youth, now I'm over it. I'm a little more mature and I don't need Krishna. So he didn't consider himself a devotee anymore. He'd protect himself quite carefully. One day what happened is there was a co-worker at his job. And she came to him one day and said, you know, I've heard a lot about the Hare Krishnas, ISKCON. I want to visit their temple. And I heard also that you had some connection with them in the past. So I was wondering, would you be willing to go with me to the temple? Because I feel a little bit nervous. I'm not so sure. I'm new. I've never heard of them before. So I don't want to go alone. Maybe you can come with me. And immediately he said, no way. That part of my life is over now. I don't do that anymore. You can go on your own if you like. Find someone else. But she didn't give up. She pushed and pushed. She said, please, come on. Just one time you can go with me. And so finally he gave in. He said, okay. But I'm not going to get involved in anything. I'm going to stand in the back You can do, you know I'm there, but you can do, you can participate as much as you want or as little as you want. But don't ask me to do anything. I'm not going to talk to anyone. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to stay there in the back of the temple. The whole time in the program, he was doing very well. Right? He had built up all these walls, just making sure that he wasn't affected, just in a professional manner. Right? Not talking to anyone, not someone say, "Hey, Prabhu, how are you? Long time no see." "No, no, not Prabhu anymore. I'm such and such." I've managed, right? He had things under control. Everything was going fine until Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja happened. Even then, he was doing okay throughout most of the Guru Puja. At the final stage, when the chamar, the whisk, the fan happened, and his eyes, he happened to see that chamar go high into the sky and make this beautiful movement before coming down. And something happened inside. All these walls he had made, trying to hold Krishna back, they came crashing down, tumbling down. And it was like the floodgates opened. And he just broke down and started crying and crying and crying. Said, "Oh my God, what happened? All these years, Krishna, I forgot you. All these 20, 50, 25 years went by. It's like waking up from a bad dream. What happened?" You know what he was doing before he left the movement, his main service? He was a pujari. Right? He spent his days doing aarti for the Lord. And you think Krishna forgot that? All that wonderful service he did? No. He knew just what the weak spot is. You do service like that every day. Right? You can do aarti once, you can do aarti twice. But every day you do like that, there has to be some relationship. There has to be some affection that's born between the Lord and the devotee. And that one chamar, it went up and it all came back. It all came back. Krishna, he knows where that hook is. Right? He knows how to pull us to himself. Just like these dams, right? He had created this wall, this dam. You know the dam, these to hold water back in a river. If there's one little crack in the dam, there's one little hole, one little space, within minutes, the entire dam can come crashing down. You know, I once visited this the Hoover Dam, it's called. It's the largest dam in North America, near Las Vegas. Massive, massive. The walls are so thick, practically as wide as this temple room of the dam, probably wider. Right? Thick, thick, thick concrete. And they monitor it 24 hours a day. Someone is physically monitoring the entire structure. Because if there's a tiny little chip, within hours, the force of the water is so great that it can break through and the water can come gushing through. The entire city of Las Vegas would be destroyed. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it would happen, right? Everyone would come down. So they monitor all the time. Similarly, we may put up walls against Krishna. This devotee, he had put up walls against Krishna. Right? But Krishna, he knew, this little hole is left. Right? This chamar he forgot to block. I know this will get into him. Right? And when the time was right, Krishna is also like that. Maya, she'll wait for when the time is right, when we're proud. Krishna, he'll also wait for the time is right, when we've learned some humility. He'll let us enjoy the material world. We have some desire to enjoy the material world. Krishna will say, "Okay, it's okay. You can go enjoy. Spend a little time. Go and earn some money. Go do this. Go satisfy your desires. Try it out. See what happens." Right? He'll let us try it out. When we're enough beaten by material nature, when we've had enough, we've learned some humility, at that point, we're in some suffering, Krishna, he'll say, "Okay, the time is right." And he'll find that little hole. He'll get into our system. And it'll all come back. It'll all come back. Every living entity is in that situation. Devotees, it's very clear. But everyone is in that situation. And this is the job of the preacher. This is the job of the devotee. Is finding that little hole. Planting that little seed. Getting in there. Right? And we never know. We never know. We think, "Oh, I didn't really say much to that person. Oh, I really didn't do much. I just gave him a book," or whatever. Just a few words. It happens sometimes in the life of a preacher, right? That you say something to someone, just casually. They're catching you at some odd moment, you're in a big rush. Yeah, like this, you say something. 3 years later, you return. They say, Prabhuji, do you remember me? No, sorry. I said, you know, 3 years ago you said this to me. We met here, and it changed my life. From that day on, it changed my life. Right? You think, wow, we didn't do that. We don't have the power to do that. How can we change someone's life with one word? Right? But as a preacher, we're trying to help Krishna, facilitate this process that Krishna does, getting into a person. Some little statement, little thing can plant a seed, and later on it can make the whole dam come crashing down. Prabhupada said his books are like that. One little book, it can change someone's life just by its presence. So this is our hope. Right? This is our hope. Otherwise, this demoniac nature, the demons, what they have, we're all in that situation. Right? Just as they were captivated by Mohini Murthy, we're no different, right? We're no different. We're all in the same situation. At least the demons, it took Mohini Murthy, the Supreme Lord himself, to captivate them. Us, it doesn't even take Mohini Murthy. We become captivated by just anyone, anything. Right? Even we don't see someone real, just on the screen we see someone dancing. We become captivated. Right? So we're all in that situation. Right? This is our only hope. Right? Is Krishna's mercy the association of devotees? And then some use of our own intelligence. So I'll stop at that point. If anyone has any questions or comments, they can. Yes, Prabhu, please.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for a wonderful class. You gave it. It was like very, very striking thing for us that you were speaking directly from your heart itself, Prabhu. Thank you very much. You being a householder and had a devotional life from your childhood itself, I'm taking a little bit liberty to ask some very serious question, Prabhu. Is that you being a householder and you are seeing all these things that is going to affect you also. And those temptation, those difficulties, all those things might be coming in your life also. So when it comes in your life, being a devotee, how you are tackling yourself very seriously and how you are coming back into the track of devotional life as quick as it can. Can you give us some very practical tips by which you are making your spiritual life perfect when those temptation comes? Because you being a preacher, at the same time you are staying in US or a Western country. So those temptations were regular and very fast enough. So when those temptation comes, at the same time you being in the household life also. So it's very difficult to maintain a mental equilibrium at regular interval. And it becomes very difficult to see to it that your devotional life also increases as and when your days goes by and your years goes by. So when those difficulties come or those temptation comes in your life, what is the practical tip that you do in your life? So that again at the spot, you come back again on track on your devotional life and your devotional life becomes very smooth enough. Can you just tell us those practical tips, Prabhu?
Very nice question. So many of the things I was talking about, they were things that came from my own experience. In other words, I wasn't putting them in terms of myself. But I can give you a few examples at different points in my life. When I was as yet unmarried and trying to be a good brahmachari, in the U.S. it's a little bit different. There's not so many ashrams and things like that. And I was also studying at the same time, doing my degree. And it was very... these temptations would be there. They'd come if you're out in the world, right? Especially, like you said, in Western countries, there's a lot of open display of lustful activities. And this is actually the platform of most people's relationships. Every type of relationship, humor, jokes, they're all, in a subtle way, they're all meant to incite, ignite the senses, you know. So before I was married, I'd always ask this question for myself. When someone, the mind would go in some direction, I'd always think, what can actually come from this? What do I actually want? Can I see myself entering into a long-term relationship with this person? And at least by whatever training my parents gave me and the Association of Devotees, at the very least, my intelligence was able to tell me immediately that the answer is no. Right? I was sure that if I wanted to become a grihastha, it would only be with a devotee. Right? There's no other possibility. Because that much I knew, that otherwise there's no scope for any kind of happiness in this world if it's not related to Krishna, if Krishna's not in the center. And in this way, I check myself anytime this type of thing would happen. That no, this is not going to go anywhere. Then why are you putting yourself through this? Right? I remember one time, you know, the pressure is so strong, so strong. One time there was a friend of mine in the university. We were walking to class together. And he said, Ravi, at that time I wasn't initiated. He said, Ravi, do you ever date in your culture? Do you date? And, well, first he asked me, do you have a girlfriend? I said, no, I don't have a girlfriend. And he kind of looked at me with pity, you know, oh, poor thing. Doesn't have a girlfriend. Okay. Are you dating? I said, no. Oh, really? You don't have time? No, we don't date. You don't date? I said, no, there's no point in dating, right? I mean, the idea is that you date, you get married. But in our culture, our parents will arrange our marriage and we just get married. And he said, no, but you see, the point of dating is not marriage only. The point of marriage is you will never know. There's a certain... You mean you've never held someone's hand before and never had the feeling, the experience of not knowing where this is going to go? And I said, no. He said, really? You're missing out on something in life, right? You think he was considering that happiness. You're holding someone's hand and you don't know where this is going to go, whether it's going to work out or not. And he was looking at me with a lot of pity. You know? And at that time I was thinking, no, this is exactly what I don't want. Right? Exactly what I'm not looking for. He was trying to create this sense of lack in me. That poor thing, you're suffering so much. And I thought, no, this is exactly what I'm trying to avoid. I don't want to be in that situation ever, where I'm holding someone's hand and I don't know where it's going to go from there. Why put myself through that? I don't want to. Right? Sometimes people say, how is it that you did so well in your studies? And the answer is just this, right? If we remain focused in life, then anyone can do it, right? But 99% of people, they're spending all their time doing this kind of thing. They're running. The mind is just spinning. So they only have like 10% of their brain is actually working on what they're supposed to be doing. This is a fact at work also. They did these surveys. Right? Every minute, the average person is thinking about the opposite sex. Every minute, they did this survey. Right? While at work. No one is actually focusing on work or on study. Right? Anyway, so when I was before marriage, then at some point, I decided that, okay, the service I wanted to do in life for Krishna was this academic seva. I wanted to preach in the academic world. It's a specific type of preaching that it's often indirect in nature, and it can have very powerful effects, but sometimes the results are not immediately visible. And you have to operate in their social circles. You have to speak their language and so forth. You have to be a professor. And I realized, other devotees also, they gave me advice, that, okay, if I want to do this type of service, then I have to get married. Otherwise, you cannot survive. Right? You cannot last. Otherwise, you'll end up... one time I was in the car. I was teaching for 1 year at the University of Florida. This is just after I finished my PhD. It was my first job. And I was going to the Alachua Temple in Florida with Ritadvaja Swami. And just out of the blue, Maharaj asked me. He said, so, Radhika Raman, you're planning on getting married? And at that time, I'm a brahmachari, you know. And I said, no. Well, Maharaj, actually, I don't know. I'm happy in my... He said, no. You have to get married. He said, if you don't get married, then you'll end up with someone. You'll end up with one of your students. You'll end up with one of your co-workers. And this is the nature of the world. It's irresistible. I realized, okay, if I want to do this service, then, okay, I have to become grihastha. So at some point, this resolution came in my mind, after maybe second, third year of teaching. As soon as this thought comes in the mind, you know what the mind starts to do? It says, okay, now I'm not a brahmachari anymore, so... The world is, you know, open. I can now, I have... And then you actually, maybe she's the one. Maybe she's the one. Before any time Mataji comes and speaks, okay, Hare Krishna, just business relationship only, just for the purpose of service. Now maybe I can find out a little bit about her. Maybe she's the right one. And this mind, it starts to go. This is called Vyudha Vikalpa. This way. Maybe like this, maybe. And it's just natural. The mind starts spinning. It was amazing how Krishna works. I still remember where I was exactly when I decided that I wanted to become a grihastha. And the mind, I remember how it started spinning. Within moments, it started spinning. And I thought, okay, I've just made this decision. The mind is spinning. I need some help. Right? This is not going to work. I know this is not a good thing. So just for some peace of mind, I thought, okay, there was Bhagavatam. In the room I was staying, there was a full set of Bhagavatam. So I picked out one volume of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I opened it up, and just this verse I was talking about, this purport. Literally, I picked out a volume on random, I opened it up, and the purport in front of me, Prabhupada was saying that when a devotee desires to get married, he should not think who to get married to. He should have the firm faith that Krishna will get him a princess to marry. Just like Krishna gave Kardamuni a princess. He was not a prince, but Krishna gave him a princess. And a girl should always remember that Krishna will get her the boy who is suitable to her heart's desire. And in this way, they should simply go on doing their devotional service. And I remember sitting there going, oh my God, Prabhupada is here. Right? Krishna's here. He'll give us guidance. Right? He'll give us, if we take shelter of him, he will give us guidance. And immediately, whew, such a big relief. It's really a big relief. We think it gives us some happiness, some pleasure. But you get it out of your system, it's such a big relief. Again, I can look at the world without these rose-colored glasses. Right? I can see things as they are. I know, okay, fine, Krishna will help. He'll be peaceful. Of course, then when you get married and you have a job and so forth, then there's other kinds of temptations. There's the desire to move up in your career, to do very well, to succeed, right? These ambitions, they come up. Why do they come up? Well, if you're in a work environment, they will come up. Everyone around you is passionate. They're ambitious. They're trying to get to the top. And you get caught up in that feeling, even if you don't want to. You cannot help it. You got to move. You got to do. You got to accomplish. It's mode of passion. You know, you like in a city like Bombay, even if you don't want to rush, you have to rush. Why? Because everyone is rushing. I remember when I used to take the metro in London. Sometimes I would be going to the temple. I had plenty of time. I decided to spend the day there at the temple. But you enter the metro system, the subway system. The minute you enter, you have to run. And I used to think, why am I running? I don't have any appointment. I don't have anyone to meet. But I'm running. Why? Everyone is running. Got to run to catch the first train. Even if I miss the train, 5 minutes later, there's another train. And I don't have an appointment, but I have to run. This is the mode of passion. You get caught up in that environment. Everyone's got ambitions. I need ambitions as well. Right? I remember I used to go to these conferences. I still go. This is every year. All the professors of religion in the United States, they all come to one conference. It's their main professional conference, the American Academy of Religion Conference. And when you're there, 8,000 professors of religion, 8,000, come from all over the country to talk, to discuss. They talk, they know everything. They talk all about religion. 8,000 of these professors. And when you're there, you know what happens? You start feeling Someone, you meet someone who's there, this person is more successful than you are. They're in a better position than you are. They've published more books than you have. They know so much more about your subject than you have. You try saying something and someone else shows that you don't know anything and you feel like a fly on the wall. Someone then gives you some recommendation. Why don't you read this book? Why don't you study that? Why don't you do this? Maybe you should apply for this position. You think, yeah, you know, I've never read that, but maybe I should read that book. Maybe I should study that. I'm telling from my own experience, right? This is all about books and intellectual work. You may have your own experience in terms of accomplishing this, doing that project, and so forth. And pretty soon the mind, it starts going to overdrive, overheating. Oh my God, I have to do this. It's intense. And at that point, it just helps, this exercise. It helps so much. You just take a moment in some quiet corner. And even if you don't find a quiet corner, you sit down where you are. And you just think for a moment, hold on, what am I doing here? Why am I here? Who am I? Ask that fundamental question. Who am I? Right? Why did I show up in this place? Why did I get into this whole mess? Because I want to serve Krishna. I'm here as Krishna's representative. I want to be Srila Prabhupada's representative in this situation. This is why I'm here. Am I prepared to? This man, he's got a better position than I have. Am I prepared to make the sacrifices that he's made to get there? Am I prepared to sacrifice what's valuable to me to get to that position? No. No. We have to remind ourselves. You remember, you think, right, that I'm here in this position. I made certain choices in my life. This is why I'm a devotee. I may not be the topmost professor in this universe, right? But I made certain choices in my life. Early on, I decided that I was not going to strive for that. I was going to be a devotee of Krishna. Because of that, I have to spend 2.5, 3, 4 hours every day doing sadhana. That takes a lot of time. That takes a lot of effort. In that time, there's so many books I could read, so many papers I could write, so many lectures I could give. But no, I made a choice. I made a choice. Early on, I made a choice. Am I ready to sacrifice that choice today? No. No. Right? So when the pressure becomes intense, the ambition becomes intense, we have to take a moment and ask ourselves, who am I? What am I doing here? What's the purpose of my life? Am I willing to sacrifice my Krishna consciousness, the time and association I have with devotees, any opportunity I'm able to attend a program? Am I willing to give that up? No, I'm not. Then, why are you so upset? Why are you so ambitious? Why are you hankering so that like that? In this way, we have to speak to our mind. And immediately, there's big relief. Okay, it's okay. Let them be who they are. It's okay. I don't have to compete with them. Let them be who they are. Let them be happy. I have nothing against them. But I know who I am. I'm a devotee of Krishna. I'm Srila Prabhupada's servant. And then you say a little prayer. You say, my dear Srila Prabhupada, my only prayer is that in whatever situation you place me, in whatever place I may find myself, please let me always remember that I am your representative. That I'm going there as your representative. Bas. Then you want me to look bad, you want me to look good. It's up to you. But I'm going there simply as your representative. And you say that, and immediately there's so much relief. So much relief. You realize, then what does it matter, right? Any problem, any infamy, that goes to Prabhupada. Any praise, any success, that goes to Prabhupada. If he wants, he can make me a success. If he wants, he can make me a failure. What does it matter? I'm his representative after all. So temptations are there in life at every stage. At one stage, one temptation may be very strong. At another stage, a different temptation may be very strong. At one point in life, for a man, one temptation may be strong. For a woman, another temptation may be strong. Right? We all have our temptations. We all have our attachments. Right? But in every situation, we can ask ourselves, who am I? What's the purpose of my life? I'm a servant of Krishna. Okay. Then stop it. Don't go there. Don't go there. And if we ever find ourselves that it's becoming a little unmanageable, this process is not working, you find yourself still going crazy, then before it's too late, run to some devotee, someone you trust, and reveal your mind to them. Guhyam akhyati prichati, Rupa Goswami says. Go tell another devotee, someone you can trust, someone you know who genuinely cares about you, and say, Prabhu, I'm embarrassed, but I have to tell you this. I'm really sorry. I have this problem. Please help, some way, please help. Right? We run to some devotee, call out for help, reveal our mind in confidence. And then Krishna, he'll take care of the rest. Right? If we're sincere like that, Krishna will give us guidance. It's not that we won't have our ups and downs, but he'll help us. He'll show us the way out. He'll always give us guidance. There's a saying that the easiest way out of a situation is through it. Right? The easiest way out is through. We have to go through life. We have to experience it. We'll have our issues. We'll have our problems. Brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. Anyone. Everyone will have their stages. But these two things. We pray sincerely to Krishna and we get the help of devotees. We can survive. We can survive. Not only can we survive, we can flourish in spiritual life. We can flourish. Is that okay? Yeah? Any other questions, comments? Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, you talked about packing, you know, yourself in devotees and Krishna consciousness. Now, you know, as a lot of us are grihasthas, this packing up would be different, let's say, for a person who's 40, 45, married, kids are grown up, and it would be different for him or her. It would be different for the kids who are 15, 16. And so they are, you know, it's not one level or one type of packing for everybody. And if somebody has parents who are maybe 60, 65 years old and they are not necessarily devotees.
Right.
So how does one kind of manage at all levels, your kids, yourself, your friends and your parents? In your own packing up schedule, but manage that you don't look like a fanatic in front of, you know, all of them, because sometimes it drives them away.
Right. We have to learn the art of not appearing like a fanatic, but still being one. Right. This is the secret to Krishna consciousness. Right. So inside, we all have to be fanatics. It's the only way we can survive. This is actually another big lesson I learned in life. I was very fortunate from an early age to have always the association of devotees. I grew up in a family of devotees and we had a temple in our home. And then when I went to the university, I was living with other devotees also studying at that same university. Then I got my first job for the first year. I was also living right next to the temple. I could attend morning program before I went to work every morning. But then when I actually got my first permanent post, it was the first time I got a job in Kentucky. And the closest devotees were a 4 hours drive away. Right? The closest temple was 6 hours away. It was impossible. I was completely alone. I was not married at that time either. And I realize now why Krishna put me in that situation. For 1 year, I struggled like anything. And I learned such an important lesson from that experience. I realized, for all that I used to think of myself, oh, I'm a devotee, I'm this and that, you know. I realized it's all completely based on the strength I get from devotees, from my association. Right? At that point, we see that what am I actually made of, right? Is it just the shell that's a devotee? Or inside, is there something also? Right? And you realize, my God, I'm hollow inside. Right? When a person is actually alone, then you realize what you're actually made of, what your spiritual life is like. They say that what a person does on their own in the room when no one is watching, that's the real test of their character. Right? That you can see who they are. This is why you look at a sannyasi. Their lives are amazing. They're never alone. There's always 10 people in their room. They're eating, sleeping. Every time there's someone there. Most of us, we cannot live that life because it's too much. We cannot handle it. We need some privacy, we need some private time, especially as grihasthas, right? So I realized at that point, okay, you know, it was a big lesson in humility. You're like, okay, this is spiritual life, this is what they say, right? Sadhu Sangha is the key. I'm not the exception to that rule. Right? You think everyone needs Sadhu Sangha, but I am a good devotee. No, my whole spiritual life is made, it's built. The only substance I have is the mercy I get from devotees. That's all. Right? So we realize that. And then, okay, even now, we're still far away from devotees, not so close. But we've tried to find ways to create that association. We create that association in our family by making our children, our family, Krishna conscious. If that's for some reason not possible, then we try to find devotees who we can associate with personally on a regular basis. If that's not possible, perhaps we can find association through hearing. Right? I know devotees who are living far, far away from other devotees. And constantly they're hearing. Right? They get association in that way. Or they're reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Some way we have to find to basically get that association. Because it's the only hope. We go through these stages. We can become, if we're in the association of devotees, you see the feelings we get for Krishna. They're very, very, you know, they're very deep. They're very real. And you go out of the association of devotees and very soon you're sinking again. So we can experience real spiritual life. It's just that we're not yet steady. That platform of nishtha is not there because of all these anarthas. So we have to try, okay. How to stay somehow in the association of devotees, how to stay packed up. And for grihasthas, there's also different ways. Like you're saying, it'll be different for people at different stages. It'll be different. But we can all find a way in our situation. It's a matter of trying. We have to push, we have to strive in some way or another. One time, my Guru Maharaj, he told me, if it's difficult waking up for Mangalarti, then create a buddy system with someone. Right? Have that person, you both decide that no matter where you are in the world, that you will call each other during Brahma Muhurta time. Right? You'll ring each other up and say, are you up? Yes, I'm up. Are you up? Yes, I'm up. Okay. It's whatever it takes. He says, whatever it takes, you have to find Maya. Right? So we just have to, we can do a little creative thinking. In all these areas in life, we do so much creative thinking. Innovation and this is the name of the game today. In work and job, think fresh, innovative, be creative. So in spiritual life also, we should use that. Use our intelligence, be a little innovative and creative. Find some ways in our own situation to work it out. I know one devotee family, I was just giving this example yesterday. They're completely alone. They're in this, they're in a similar situation, the same state where I was. They're hours and hours away from any devotee association in a very remote part. And somehow, they're forced to stay there. Because of their material circumstances. And it's amazing how much association they create for themselves. They hold programs whenever they can. They're constantly listening to lectures from iskondesiretree.com. They're doing full morning program, full evening program. Even their relatives are not so Krishna conscious. So it's possible. It's possible. It can be a little struggle, but it's possible. We have to remember that each one of us, we will have our struggle in Krishna consciousness. There will be some aspect of our life that will be a struggle. No one's spiritual life is a completely smooth sail. Because this is how Krishna checks to see whether we're serious or not. Right? For someone, it's their parents. They're a difficulty. For someone, it's their wife. She's not Krishna conscious. For someone, it's their husband. The husband is not interested. For someone, everything is nice, but the kids, they turn out crazy. Right? So everyone has their own struggle. Everyone has their problem. For someone, everything is nice, but their job will kill them. They have to work 12 hours a day, day and night. They have no job security. The axe is always hanging above their head. We might think that just my situation is so difficult. Look at this person, he's practicing Krishna consciousness so nicely, always chanting and dancing joyfully. Everyone has their struggle in life. Everyone does. We just have to recognize ours, and we have to take it, you know, with some kshatriya spirit. Yes, this is my struggle. Krishna's given this to me. It's okay. I'll overcome. I'll get to the end. Tatenu kampam susamikshamanam bhunjana evatmakritam vipakam. One day I'll get to the other side and Krishna will say, you did well. It's okay. You did a good job. I gave you this struggle. You passed by. Now, mukti pade sadaya bhak. Liberation becomes your rightful inheritance. One day we can go to Krishna and we can claim that now give it to me, I did it, I managed. Now it's my rightful claim. And Krishna, he will not refuse. He'll be the first one to give to us. I don't know, I think our time is up. I was told 10 o'clock, it's nearly 10:30 now. So I'm sorry, I speak a little too much. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to all of your questions. But thank you all very much for your association. Thank you for keeping me packed up in your own association. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.